Baruch Hashem, last week I took this commitment, Bli Neder, to learn the Ora Chaim. And what we'll be doing is basically running through some of the amazing highlights that I found really, really interesting, and to encourage others to learn it inside and not just rely upon me. But I think these will be some great tasters, some really interesting insights to get a feel for the Ora Chaim HaKadosh. Beautiful perspective on Torah, drawing from Pshat, Drashas, Remez, and Kabbalah, as we will see. All right, so we start off where the Or HaChaim talks about this phrase, Bekan'o et kinati. Pinchas was very zealous. He was zealous for me. And, you know, this is something which many, many people struggle with. When is a time when it's right to be a zealot for God, like Pinchas was? Obviously, he was in the right. And when is it inappropriate to be zealous? Maybe overzealous could cause more problems than it solves sometimes. So each situation, of course, is unique. But what the Or HaChaim says is that Pinchas' zealousness was purely l'shem shamayim. It was kin'ati. It was my zealousness. There wasn't an inch of care for his own personal honor. He was only killing Zimri and Cosby for the honor of God and to save the lives of the Israelites. He ended up saving the plague and saving, who knows, thousands and thousands of lives.
Did he know it would stop the plague?
I don't know. I don't know what if he knew that it would stop the plague, but I know that he knew that it was the right thing to do, and it was indeed the right thing to do, obviously. And the gedder, of course, is always, am I doing this purely l'shem shamayim? Am I doing this act, whatever it is, you know, for Hashem? It could be you're doing it for the sake of Hashem, and it's still not correct, depending on what the end result will be. And every situation is, of course, unique. But the main thing here is to understand that Pinchas is doing it purely l'shem shamayim, for the sake of God. And I was thinking about a story. I was just learning about the Noam Elimelech. So Rav Elimelech was getting harassed by his enemies, you know, and his chassidim said, you know, he almost got thrown in jail, and his chassidim said, you know what, you got to report this guy and the terrible things that he's doing to you, even if you're very humble, for the sake of Torah, for the sake of, you know, not God's honor. And to make a point, you gotta get this guy, you gotta put him in cherim. You gotta excommunicate this. So the Noam Elimelech was about to do it, he's about to blow the shofar and put this guy in cherim. And suddenly he started thinking to himself, who are you kidding, Noam Elimelech? You think you're really doing it just for the sake of Hashem? You know that you're doing it at least a little bit for your own revenge, for your own honor. And as soon as that thought went through his head, he realized, you know what? I can't do it. And he didn't put him in excommunication. So, of course, every situation is unique, but that shows you the extent of selflessness which is involved when we are doing any act, certainly an extreme act. So I thought that was very interesting. All right, moving on. We're going to highlight, let's say, eight highlights of the Or HaChaim. So that was definitely a favorite of mine. So, Pinchas is granted kahuna, priestship. He's going to be a Kohen. Now, technically, he was from the descendants of Aaron, so he should have already been a priest. So the Or HaChaim explains that that God was saying that your children, for all generations, will draw from a pool in the heavens called the Kohen pool of souls. And using his Kabbalistic understanding, the Or HaChaim says that a Kohen soul is actually different than an Israelite or a, Levi. He has a different soul, and now the descendants of Pinchas will get these special souls. I just thought that was very, very interesting because it's using his Kabbalistic knowledge and putting it into the Pshat. And maybe it helps us understand some of the prohibitions and the special laws that Kohanim are meant to do because, of course, they're special souls. Yeah? All right. Hamukah asher hukah. So the Torah says that Zimri Pinchas smit Hamuka, he killed this person, Asher Huka, who was already smitten, was already hit. So of course the question is, what does it mean he was already hit? He was only hit after Pinchas killed him. So what does it mean it was already hit? So the Or HaChaim goes on a bit of a tangent and explains in depth. He says that when you do a sin, you're actually disconnecting your neshama from its source. And essentially, Zimri and Cosby was already smitten. They were already dead. When they did that terrible act, their soul was no longer there, so they were already smitten in a way. And he goes on to say that the truth is that there's an idea that the wicked's name will rot. So each of us has a name in the heavens. Okay? Each of us has a name. So you're Daniel Chai. So, and they say when you pass away, you're gonna what's it called? Your name. They're gonna ask you what your name was. Mm-hmm. And some people remember, and some people will forget their name.
That's why we're supposed to learn a passage that has our name.
Correct. So. There's an idea. I'm going on a little bit of a tangent, but you're going to go to the heavens. They're going to ask you when you go to the heavens, what's your name? Some people remember, some people forget. What does that mean? You're going to forget your name? The concept is we have a spiritual essence which is symbolized by our name. Our name is our chemistry makeup. And when you do a sin, you disconnect yourself from your name. And when you do a mitzvah, you connect yourself to a name. It's also when you call yourself your name, you actually strengthen your connection to your name. Many Kabbalists will only go by their Hebrew name, and their full Hebrew name often. In any case, so Zimri was actually completely disconnected from his name, and Pinchas actually, by killing him, freed his soul up to reconnect to his true name in the heavenly world. So he did him a favor by killing him.
It's interesting, I was just thinking of this other thing. But in Sanhedrin, you're allowed to kill somebody if it's in the heat of the moment.
Right.
Like straight after they've killed somebody, and you go after them, then you pucker, you like.
Mm-hmm.
But if you wait and you deliberate, and then you go after them, then it's a different story.
That's very interesting. Also in the army, there's a similar concept even today. And it's interesting, that's going to come up later in the Parsha. But we'll get to that in just a few minutes.
Okay.
Very, very interesting. But yeah, he did do it in the heat of the moment, and that was the law. When it was in the heat of the moment to stop a plague, to stop a tragedy that was going on, it was a permitted thing to do, as Moshe had forgotten, but Pinchas remembered. Anyways, all right. Another just interesting, this one I don't know is such a homiletic lesson, it's just fascinating. According to the Or HaChaim, the Midianite who is mentioned was Cosby, was the daughter of Balak. It's also mentioned in the Midrash. Balak is Tzur, and that explains why she was so passionate about going to do this. She was going to inspire everyone else to go do this sin, and she was avenging the honor of her father. And that's why she was the main Midianite who inspired everyone. She was a princess. And it's just, I guess, something to take away from it is that sometimes we get so caught up in the honor of our family and whatnot, but that could still lead us to sin. Even if, you know, it seems like it's a noble attribute. But in reality, it was not a good thing to do. All right, moving on. So in chapter 25, and this is what we were talking about before, the Torah commands us b'tzror et ha-Midyanim, to smite the Midianites, and to go to war with the Midianites. So the question is, this only comes later, this command to smite the Midianites. It wasn't immediately. After, you know, the whole shebang, God tells them to smite the Midianites. So like you said, it wasn't in the heat of the moment. So why does the Torah go out of its way to smite the Midianites and not, I don't know.
Maybe it's off the judgment. Maybe that is the judgment.
So this was the judgment. God decided this is the judgment. And that's definitely one legitimate perspective. The Or HaChaim has a very interesting angle. What he says is that God needed to, in order to get the Jewish people to be mitzkaper, to atone for their sins, he needed them to fully feel disgusted by what the Midianites had done to them and the plague which brought forth. So the way to imbue in their minds and in our minds for all of eternality the disgustingness of that whole story of Baal Peor is this mitzvah of Tzurah et Midianim, both in the physical act of killing the perpetrators, but also in for the generations, that we should all look back at that sin and be disgusted by it, so we should have no taiva to do it in the future. Because in order to fully atone for a sin, you have to be completely disconnected from it, says Or HaChaim. In other words, let's say I have, I had pig. When I have to, in order to attain the pure, full purity, I have to think, wow, it's so disgusting to eat pig. If I still think that eating pig is delicious, but what can I do? Maybe it's something, but it doesn't achieve the purity necessary. So Tzurah et Midianim is a commandment upon all of us for generations to train ourselves to be disgusted with sexual immorality. Very, very interesting, I thought. All right. A few more highlights and we'll call it a day. The Or HaChaim says something that I felt was very on pshat, very on target in terms of pshat. The Torah goes out of its way to tell us that Datan v'Aviram were the people responsible for the Korach rebellion. And of course we know that already. We already know, though. We just read it a few parshas ago, so it seems superfluous. So the Or HaChaim explains that Datan v'Aviram were actually the main perpetrators of the Korach rebellion. You might have thought it was Korach, but no. Actually, Datan v'Aviram were the real brains behind everything. And he proves it by the fact that Moshe actually goes not to Korach, but to Datan v'Aviram, and he approaches them. And Datan v'Aviram are the ones who get swallowed up by the earth. So it's clearly Datan v'Aviram were really the ones pushing Korach to do whatever rebellion he was doing. And on a lesson level, because we always want to learn practical ideas, it's like oftentimes we think that we, the teachers, the rabbis, the leaders, are the ones movers and shakers. But very often it's the students, for example, it's their helpers, it's the friends who are actually behind the scenes making things happen in real life. And if a rabbi doesn't have a student, if Rabbi Nachman doesn't have Rabbi Natan, if I don't have a Daniel, then, you know, the Torah doesn't really come out into the world, and vice versa. So as the second in command has to, you know, has to realize his importance, in many instances, he's actually behind the scenes the first, the one who's really pushing things.
That's what I was talking about this morning. The lady was saying that there's a show, Who Wants to Be a Star or something, singing. And I said to her, I don't want to be the main singer. I'm very good in the supporting role.
Exactly. And everyone needs to know their role. And in different things in life, you'll have different roles. Mm. You know, but embrace whatever your role is and just be okay with it. For example, in the army, I am not the star. I'm not the best shot. But I've accepted my role as an excellent salad cutter. I'm really good at working in the kitchen for 12 hours a day. And I'll let my friends shoot those terrorists down. That's my role. Okay, I'm okay with that. In other time, things in life, I can shine. Everyone has to know their place to shine and find your spot and do your thing. Okay, so just do a closer. So something very enlightening. The end of the parsha, we have all the genealogy behind. Once again, the Torah goes through many, many, many genealogies about different names of all the Jewish people. There's a count. So, it seems, again, superfluous. But we know the derech of the Kabbalah is to find meaning in the details, especially things like genealogy. In fact, according to Kabbalah, you'll often find the deepest lessons in the seemingly superfluous things like genealogy. So Or HaChaim is a great, if you want to find some deep meanings, Or HaChaim is a great place. Al derech HaDrush and Remez and Sod, to find these nice ideas, and I recommend you learn it inside. I'm just going to give a taster. But so one example is when we're talking about the descendants of Yehuda. So the Torah goes out of its way to mention Aaron Onan and the sin that Aaron Onan, the children of Yehuda, had done. Of course, we know this story already. It was in the Torah, chapter 36, 37 of Genesis. Aaron Onan, the children of Yehuda and their sexual sins and the whole story with Yehuda and Tamar. So why are you telling us this? We know what happened. So the Or HaChaim explains that Yehuda, of course, refers to the Jewish people, Yehudi. That's how we became known in Jewish history. And Aaron Onan alludes to the destruction, of the complete destruction of the temple. And the sins which were so strong, which caused that destruction, which were sexual sins, okay, which is symbolized by Er, and Onan, who we know had hatred towards his brother, that's why he didn't want to have his wife have children, and that, of course, is the Sinat Chinam, the baseless hatred, which we're still trying to fix to this day. So it's a very interesting lesson that the Or HaChaim is deriving from a seemingly superfluous pasuk. Another really interesting example of this, the Torah goes out of its way to list the children of Yehuda, Shela, Partzi, and Zarechi. The Or HaChaim says this actually refers to the three stages of the Mashiach. Okay? So he says Shela refers to the time of Mashiach ben Yosef, the descendant of Ephraim, which is, I would say, the physical, political beginning stages of redemption. But who will actually die, which is alluded to in the name of Shela. I'm not going to get into it. Then there's Partzi, Lifrotz, which refers to the kingdom of David, who's going to smite the wicked doers. And then finally, there's Zarchi, where God himself is going to shine his light across the world in an era of light and love and all good. So again, look inside for more detailed version of this, but a great source of really deep ideas. Then the Torah goes on to talk about B'nai Yisachar. Yisachar, we know, is known as a Torah scholar. He would learn Torah all day. So Yisachar refers to Yisachar. And the Or HaChaim says, if you want to understand where's the real reward in the next world, it's only through learning Torah. Everything else pales in comparison. All the mitzvahs in the world pale in comparison to the spiritual delights that we are going to experience in the next world, and perhaps in this world too, through Torah learning, like we're doing right now. So that's a nice encouragement. Of course, the Or HaChaim himself was very strict. He made a little bit of money just to support his family, but then he spent the rest of his time learning Torah in depth, so that we could, you know, bathe in his delicious Torahs. And then the children of Yisachar are Tola. So that refers to being like a worm, being humble and gentle. If you're humble and gentle, it's one of the 48 attributes which a person needs to acquire in order to become a Talmud Chacham, and those are like super attributes. If you're very humble and gentle, you have a much greater chance of receiving Torah. And then there's Pua, which refers to not using your mouth for superfluous talk, not bitul Torah, but the Or HaChaim says if you really want to absorb Torah learning, you need to be like a vessel of the Beis HaMikdash. You need to really try to limit unnecessary talk as much as possible, and then the Torah that comes out of your mouth and the prayers that come out of your mouth will be much more powerful. He says Yishuv refers to sitting and making time to sit in the Beis Medrash and not just learn on the go, but to have serious Torah study so you can really absorb it. And I'll make this our final Torah for the day. Zvulun is the one who makes the money. He has a child, right, so that Yisachar can learn Torah. He has a child named Sered. You can switch the letters according to the mystical path to mean Seder. Through the making money, we make a Seder, we make order so that other people can come and learn Torah, or so that we can learn Torah. So we need to have time in our lives to be making money, but also make time in our lives to learning Torah, which is apropos for me because I went back to work today for the first time and made a little bit of money. And here we are making time to study Torah. So I hope you enjoyed as much as I did. And it's a big segula, big, big segula. All the Hasidim, like the Baal Shem Tov and many others, say if you want to really taste the depth of Torah, the mystical, the Chazal, the sweetest Torahs, it will bring Yeshua's in the next world and in this world. There's a lot of miraculous spiritual energy in learning the Or HaChaim. So I hope you go and learn it on your Shabbos Kodesh. There's a great English version over the Or HaChaim. And Bezrat Hashem, I hope to continue to throw these nuggets of Or HaChaim out to the world. At least it'll encourage me to keep keep on stagging the Heilige Orach Chaim. So, good Shabbos.